Penelope Cruz. Pedro Almodovar.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start off, if I may, with a question. Pedro, could you talk a little bit about this idea that, for me, was very intriguing of a blind screenwriter?
¿Puedes hablar un poco sobre un guionista ciego? ¿Cómo llegó esta idea para esta historia?
Bueno, yo la verdad es que muchas veces había fantaseado sobre la idea de un director que le faltara alguno de los sentidos y que esto le ocurriera en mitad de la película y entonces el resto del equipo se vengara de él terminando la película, haciendo lo que les diera la gana y que sin embargo eso se constituyera en un gran éxito.
The truth is, for a long time I had a fantasy about making a film about a director who, during the course of the film, lost one of his senses, and the crew, taking some vengeance out on the guy, would then finish the film the way they wanted, fooling him, whatever, but then the film would actually turn out to be a great success.
Eso sería bueno para la vanidad de nosotros, de los directores. Pero la idea de esta película nació de otra circunstancia.
Yeah, that would really be a film about the vanity of directors, but in fact, the origin of this film came from somewhere else.
La verdad es que surgió de algo muy simple y muy directo. Durante unos meses, yo padecí intensamente de migrañas. Entonces, viví durante varias semanas en la oscuridad de mi habitación o del salón, pero en la oscuridad porque a la migraña va incluida la fotofobia, etc.
The truth is that this film really comes from something much more simple and direct. I happened to suffer for a period of time from migraines, and because of that I had to spend a lot of times in dark parts of a room or dark parts of my house because along with migraines comes a certain kind of photophobia, kind of suffering from getting too much light.
So, you know, in the middle of the darkness, during weeks and weeks, then I start imagining something. It was a way like telling myself stories. And also when I discovered that even among the darkness and among the pain, the imagination works completely free. I mean, well, that imagination, you have to control it because perhaps you want to suicide yourself, which is not the best solution. But also, I use it just to invent this immediate alter ego that was Mateo Blanco. But it was not, I mean, I didn't try to just like to write something, to work on. No, I was just, I mean, I have so much time that it was a way to fill the time with something. And then I thought about this immediate alter ego, that of course it was a blind director, because of the darkness that I was involved, I mean surrounded, and I did it just like for fun. And then I took some notes, and at the beginning, this director, blind, was very sexually active, because perhaps it was the funnier thing for me at the moment. And you know, the first sequences that I wrote, that I thought about, it was that this man physically is very good, he does the same things that he did when he could see. I mean, it was he go to the kiosk, and he buy the newspaper. He doesn't read it, but you know, it's an habit that he doesn't want to lose, and he goes to have some the same place to have some coffee, and perhaps he talks with people, and usually in the way to his place he try to, how you say, ligar,
to flirt
just with the girls, with the girl cuyo olor le gustaba.
Whose scent, perfume he enjoyed.
Realmente era una película pornográfica sobre un ciego y un montón de chicas.
It was actually a kind of pornographic film about a blind man and lots of girls.
Entonces siempre a las chicas le él lo que hacía para ligar era you ask me about the origin and this is the origin. Perhaps it could be better than the one I did. Se situaba, quiero decir, seguía a la chica cuyo olor le gustaba y la seguía hasta el paso de cebra.
And so what he would do is he would follow the woman whose scent he liked best, and he would follow her just until he was about to kind of run into her.
Entonces, una vez en el paso de cebra, daba un movimiento suicida en un momento en que él sabía que no debía darlo, para que la chica reaccionara y le cogiera el brazo.
So what he would do is get up right up to the edge of the curb, and at that moment when he knew that he would get into trouble or, you know, have an accident, at that moment this woman would grab him to stop him from having this accident.
Y empezaban a hablar. Entonces ella le decía, tenga cuidado. I mean, pay attention, see, I mean, always, the woman said. And usually, he said, well, I go with you when the green light will be. So usually the girl accompanied this blind man, and they are very close to his place. So usually he has the journal. He said, do you mind to get up to my apartment just to read me some articles? And they say yes. And once there, as it happens in the movie, once up, then, of course, la chica le mira de arriba abajo. Porque yo creo que a los ciegos se les mira de un modo especial y a veces se les puede mirar de un modo obsceno.
And of course, once they get upstairs, the young woman really looks at him from top to bottom, because in fact, I think that there's a kind of special way that we look at blind people, a way that is almost a little bit obscene.
Eso aparece en la película. Ella directamente le mira a los genitales, etc. Y él nota el calor de su mirada en esa parte. Porque esas cosas se notan.
And you see this happen in the film too. For example, she looks at his genitals, and he's aware of that because people, they're aware when that's happening.
Bueno, no, él y naturalmente hacen, and of course they make love and all that. And you know the story that at the beginning that I took away, that it was funny to imagine in, when I was lying in the bed. It was that, you know, in front of his place there is an academy of of models, and you know, among them, there are like the urban legend that in the neighborhood there is a blind man that is the great fucker in the world, and you know they and some of them sometimes when they are neighbors when they go to the street. They fantasize just to meet these blind men. And of course, many of them, they found him. But he didn't know that in a way he was used by them. That was the origins, you know. the movie is different just since the moment that I discovered that, well, what was the tone that I wanted for the story. And also when I link this character with a photograph that I took in Lanzarote like 9 years ago, 9 or 8 years ago, because the photograph that is in the movie, it was mine. I did it as I say 8 years ago, and I was very, very intrigued by this photo, and I tried to put it always in my movies, and I never did. Because I always got the feeling that the photograph, like in Blow Up by Antonioni, there was a secret, a hidden secret in that photograph. And I always wanted to put it, and well, in this way, I discovered a way to relate this blind man, this blind writer, with that photo. And that was more or less the two things. They were the origin of Broken Embraces.
Penelope, it's been about a dozen years since you first worked with Pedro, I think. How has that relationship changed? How has he changed as a director? How has your working relationship with him changed?
Well, I was almost a little girl when I met him. I was 17, and then I was too young for the part that he was writing then. It was for Kika, and he told me he would write something in the future. He did. We worked together for the first time in Live Flesh, and of course, he has changed. I have changed. Our relationship has changed and is constantly changing. We've gone through a lot of years together, working together, and also with a strong friendship that we have. And that's why I cannot compare what I have with Pedro with working in any other movie, because I'm not just there working. I'm going through another almost life-changing adventure, you know, and I can share it with somebody that has been so present in a lot of important times of my life, because I was a kid when I met him.
Does he continue to work with actors? Say, for example, when you made All About My Mother, would you say the working relationship that he had with the actors is pretty much the same that he had here in Broken Embraces?
Yes, I think because the first time I worked with him, we didn't do a lot of rehearsals, because the character that I play, we shot for 1 week, is the beginning
of the
movie.
Well, that was in Lifeless.
For Lifeless. Mm-hmm. And then All About My Mother, Volver, and Broken Embraces, it was a similar process of preparing the characters. And he likes to do a lot of time of rehearsing. And I know when I start with him, you know, we start, and we won't begin shooting until every department is ready, until everybody has found their characters. And that's gold for an actor, to know that you are in the hands of somebody that is also the producer of his own material, and that gives you the freedom of just trying everything before you shoot. You know that you've had a couple of months or 3 months where you have had the opportunity to try that scene in so many different ways and to make all the mistakes. And it's very rare to find somebody that will give you that level of attention, mm-hmm. you know, and amount of time to find the character.
Great. Let's throw it up with some questions. Yes, over here.
I wanted to ask, now with the, it seems that in your last time with Pedro, you were sort of channeling Sophia Loren, and this time there is a very definite Audrey Hepburn feeling in the movie that you're starring in there. Can you talk about that, and also about the character's sexuality? Does she use her sexuality, you know, as an actress to convince this man that she's in love with him and she hates him? And also, the director is presented as a true love, and it really is.
Let me just repeat the question for everybody. This viewer says that in the last film that Penelope Cruz worked on with Pedro Almodovar, she seemed to be channeling Sophia Loren, and this time this viewer felt she was channeling maybe Audrey Hepburn, and could she comment on that? And also, could you talk about, I guess, the actress's sexuality, how she uses it in a certain way to advance her own aims and whatever, and is her relationship with the director actually one of true love?
Si no te importa, if you don't mind, Penelope, I'm going to just to answer about Sophia Loren and Audrey Hepburn. This is always a small reference that for working is good to have. I mean, I never try to demonstrate that she is Sophia Loren or she can be Audrey Hepburn. What is amazing is that she can be both, but this is always a reference for hair, for makeup, or for the look of the character. And the rest is completely of her own and this. So anyway.
Yeah, response. And about your other question, I think she has to become a great actress in life, and she has to become a great manipulator, and she has learned how to do that very well, almost as a way to survive. I mean, she has had a very tough life, and she decides to almost enjoy every second of that manipulation when she can, because she's also living in a very dark space. She has no freedom. You only see what she really is a little bit when she's with the family at the beginning of the movie, and she's miserable because she has nothing really that gives her happiness in her life. Then at the end, when she falls in love with Mateo, and she has this little oasis, no, of hope and happiness, but it doesn't last very long. So she has been forced to, by life, to learn to be a good manipulator and to use every weapon that she has.
But you think it's true love then, when she falls, this is the love that she has?
With Mateo? For sure, probably the love of her life, no? I saw it like that since the moment I read the script. It's the total honesty there, no? It's the opposite from the relationship she has with Jose Luis' character.
Yes, ma'am.
Question for Pedro about the shock when Ernesto Jr. shows up at Mateo's apartment. Mateo goes down and looks, it would appear, through the keyhole. And it almost for a second made me rethink the whole film and the possibility that the blindness was not real. Could you talk a little bit about how that shot functioned for you?
Pues sí, es el personaje de Ernesto Jr. llega a una hora sin anunciarse. Entonces digamos que por su propia seguridad, Mateo no abre la casa si no está esperando a alguien. Y en ese momento no está esperando a nadie.
Okay. Well, Ernesto Jr. arrives without any kind of warning. So because of that, Mateo, for his own kind of safety and security, doesn't really open the door. If he doesn't know that someone's coming, he just keeps the door closed.
Pero lo que sí quiere es dar la impresión, como no espera a nadie, y además la voz que le responde, bueno, después no tampoco le conoce, quiere dar la impresión, no importa quién sea, quien está al otro lado de la puerta, de que él ve. Entonces, con toda intención, hace la mirilla, en español se dice mirilla, la mueve para que el otro lo oiga e incluso llega a mirar, fingiendo que está viendo, para que la otra persona piense que detrás hay un vidente, no, bueno, un vidente, una persona que ve, no un invidente. Y también porque Mateo es una persona, como diría, no truculenta, pero, quiero decir, es un guionista. Entonces, a veces adopta este tipo de actitudes un poco extravagantes. Y lo que fue interesante, y le dije a Rodrigo Prieto, era que cuando Mateo levanta la mirilla, que de pronto la luz entrara en su ojo, un ojo que paradójicamente no ve, pero que de este modo era más elocuente.
But so because he doesn't see, he doesn't want to give the impression to anybody who's outside the door that perhaps someone inside is blind. So he actually looks through the peephole, you know, looks through there, pretending in a sense that the person behind the door is actually somebody who's sighted. He doesn't want him to let on that he can't really see. And it's not that Mateo, the screenwriter, is devious. It's just that, in a sense, this is the kind of protection he's created for himself. But what I told Rodrigo Prieto, the cinematographer, was that when he looks through, it was very important that a little shaft of light hit the eye, an eye, of course, that's blind and doesn't see. And that made that moment for me perhaps feel a little more eloquent. Yes?
There are many different expressions of love in this film. To you, which is the most important and is it the most dangerous?
There are many different expressions of love in the film. For you, which is the most important and which is the most dangerous?
The more
important. The most important.
Yo creo que el amor siempre es importante. Lo que ocurre es que las personas peligrosas lo convierten en peligroso.
I think that love is always important, but what happens is that even people who aren't dangerous become dangerous.
No se me ocurre nada mejor.
Nothing more I can say. Yes, sir.
Earlier in the film, Mateo was said to have an aversion to remakes, sequels, and biopics. And I was wondering if
Early in the film, Mateo says that he has an aversion to remakes, biopics, and sequels. Is that something that you, both as a filmmaker and as a film viewer, share?
Sí, y yo añado algo más. O sea, yo no tengo interés en hacer ni remakes, ni precuelas, ni secuelas, ni películas de héroes, ni películas de antihéroes, ni películas de superhéroes. El resto puedo hacer cualquier cosa.
Yes, that's right. I have to say that I have no interest in making sequels or prequels or heroic films or anti-heroic films or superhero films. Everything else, though, is okay. Yes. In many of your films, there's been a kind of dynamic between mothers and children. What about here, the dynamic about talking about the relationship between fathers and children?
Pues, en efecto, ese es uno de los temas de la película, uno de los múltiples temas que aborda la película. La relación padres e hijos. Sobre todo, la relación de padres muy importantes cuya estatura puede anular la... la existencia, es decir, puede anular al hijo.
Yes, that of course is one of the themes of the film, one of the many themes of the film, the father-son relationship, and especially those father-son relationships in which the father is a very important person. And in fact, this importance somewhat strangles or hurts the relationship with the son.
En el caso de Ernesto hijo y su padre, tienen un... el padre se aprovecha del hijo. Es decir, no creo que tenga grandes sentimientos acerca de su hijo. El padre es demasiado egoísta y demasiado inmoral. No tiene tampoco ningún escrúpulo. Y para él, el hecho de haber tenido un hijo es una anécdota biológica. No implica para él ninguna obligación. Al contrario, le utiliza para poder espiar a través del making of a Lena. Y, por supuesto, es un tipo de padre muy conservador, al cual no le hace ninguna gracia que su hijo sea homosexual.
Yeah, in this case, Ernesto Jr. Is really taken advantage of by his father. There's really no emotional bond between them. The father has really no emotional tie to him. The father is a very self-centered man, really an unscrupulous man without any kind of real morals. And for him, a son is really simply a kind of like biological fact that implies no other connection, no other obligation. Just the opposite. In fact, he simply uses the son as a way of spying on Elena. The making of film becomes the way that he simply can use his son to carry out his bidding. And the fact, of course, that he's presented as a man who's very conservative in his politics, whatever, also leads us to he probably has very little patience with his son's sexuality.
Entonces, Ernesto hijo es una persona débil, frágil, no tiene el dominio y el poder, no tiene la fuerza suficiente para oponerse contra su padre, y lo que hace hasta que se muere el padre es exactamente la vida que el padre quiere que haga, que es un absoluto error para él. Se casa como él, tiene hijos como él, hijos que le odian a él tanto como él odia a su propio padre, y para el cual la muerte del padre es la absoluta liberación.
So Ernesto Jr. turns out to be a character who's very weak, very fragile. He doesn't have the means or the power to really confront his father. And what's worse is he will actually follow in his father's footsteps. That is, he'll get married, have kids, the kids will absolutely hate him, and the only kind of liberation will be the death of the father, as it was for him.
El otro hijo, que es Diego. Diego, sin embargo, es lo opuesto. Es decir, Diego y su padre biológico, Mateo Blanco, yo creo que tienen una relación ideal de padre e hijo. Y es mucho más interesante porque además ninguno de los dos sabe que les une esa relación biológica.
The other son in the film, Diego, has the absolute opposite relationship with his father. He has this absolutely terrific relationship with Mateo, who is his biological father, but the thing is, of course, neither of them are aware of this connection between them.
Yo creo, hablando en este caso ya no de padres sino de madres, en el caso de Judith, a mí la maternidad es un tema que también me interesa a lo largo de toda mi filmografía y creo que Judith es una de las madres más originales que he escrito porque Judith, a pesar de ese enorme complejo de culpa, o sea, dentro de ese enorme complejo de culpa que la caracteriza, ha creado una familia y eso es un valor enorme que yo creo que solo tienen las mujeres más que los hombres. No solo por el hecho de dar a luz, sino pues la mujer tiene capacidad para hacer y ella lo hace. Que ese padre y ese hijo se relacionen desde el principio como tales, incluso sin saberlo. Yo creo que el gran achievement, el gran logro de Judith como madre es haber creado una familia en la cual los otros dos miembros ni siquiera saben que lo son, pero sin embargo son una auténtica familia.
I think that to get move away from the topic of fathers on to mothers, in this case Judith, and this is of course a theme about mothers that runs in a lot of my work, for me Judith is one of the most original mother figures who I've written. In a way she's despite her kind of very complex feelings of guilt, she still managed through all that to create a family. And this is for me a very, very powerful thing that she's done, that she has, and this is something perhaps really especially that's part of what women can do, she has the capacity through all her pain to still form a family, to bring together a father and son and in a sense seed their relationship so that they have this wonderful relationship even though of course they don't know that they're actually related to each other. And so for me this is the great achievement of Judith, her ability through all of her pain to still create and in a sense hold together a family. Okay, time for just a couple more. Yes. Otra vez. Is there kind of some kind of play going on with girls with suitcases and women on the verge?
Obviously. I wanted for them to make a comedy. Just to, because the drama, the suffering that there are in their lives will be more clear if in the background I put a comedy. So I decided for Women on the Verge because it was the cheaper for me and also the easier because then I could just adapt it in my own way, I mean, without asking permission for anything. That's why I put it women. First because I needed a comedy, and it was not so important what comedy was there, but it was easier for me just to use my own material. But it's clear, it's an adaptation of Women on the Verge, of Funny Breakdown.
Mm-hmm. Anyone in the back there? Okay, this gentleman here.
I was just going to say, if you could re-edit one of your own films as Mateo does, which one would it be?
Question is, if you could re-edit one of your own films, which of your films would you choose to re-edit?
To re-edit?
Sí, hacer el montaje otra vez.
Pues es que yo no pienso en... No pienso nunca ni en reeditar, ni en volver a rodar. Algunas de mis películas, ninguna de mis películas. Creo que es bueno que las películas se terminen y que uno reconozca con toda humildad qué película ha hecho y pasar después a la siguiente.
Frankly, that's something that I just never really think of doing. I would never think of going back to re-edit or to reshoot. I think one of the things that's really good about a film is that you finish it, it's over. And then you really should become aware of what you've done and then move on to whatever your next project is.
No, but anyway, I think I have, the only part of the crew that I'm completely faithful is the editor. I mean, Pepe Salcedo is the editor of the 17 movies that I did. And I think it's great. But thinking about just the movies that I could, I could do it again, trying to make it better. It was, for example, Kika or Lifeless.
I don't have to translate that to him. Yeah. He's just said it.
But you can translate it in the better English.
I go into Spanish, right, yeah.
No, but you can translate it in the better English.
Okay, we can do one more. Yeah, yes, right here.
I wonder about the role of the actress in this film and whether the actress is maybe a better actress in life than she is on film, and yet through her commitment to the film and to the art of acting, she becomes free of being an actress in life. So I wonder about both of your ideas about what an actress does and if this is something that that you find resonates with your own life and your own career.
Question really for both Pedro Almodovar and Penelope Cruz is about the status of the actress. It seems that this actress is a more effective actress in her own real life than she might be on screen. And what does this say about the kind of sense of role playing that runs through both, say, art and life? And could you both comment on that?
Dímelo en español.
Sí, sí, sí.
Okay.
Sí. La actriz en la película quizás es mejor como actriz en su propia vida como de que una actriz en cine. ¿Y qué eso tiene que decir en términos de la importancia de ser actor en vida y también en cine?
Sí. ¿Respondes tú?
Vale. For me, I saw it as two different things. She's been secretly very, very passionate about art and about this art in particular. But she hasn't had the type of life where she could afford to share that, not even with her family. I mean, it was all about where are we going to eat tonight or tomorrow. So there was no place for her to dream so high. But I really imagine that she has been, because she spent a lot of time alone, maybe forever, and I guess she would have been maybe watching 2-3 movies every night and exploring that art. And then she is able to, not able, she's forced to use that in her life because she has no choice. She does it better than most of the people would do because that is in her, that passion for acting and for wanting to understand a human behavior, it's there. But maybe if she could have chosen, she would have chosen to be able to express all of that in her work and not having to lie or manipulate in her life. But there was no choice for her. That's why for me, the most emotional scene of the whole movie to shoot was the moment when she goes to meet Mateo. And suddenly that door opened and there is a chance that she could maybe do that in her life. And for me that scene was, because I imagine what it would be for somebody that has the passion that I had about acting since I was a little girl, somebody that cannot even say, I would like to try to do that. No?
Yo creo que el personaje de Elena es el personaje de una mujer inacabada.
I think that the character of Elena is the character of a woman who's unfinished.
Y es una mujer desde el principio, además yo no pude evitarlo, desde el principio condenada a la fatalidad.
And I think that really from the very beginning, she's somebody, and there's no way to escape this, who's really has a condemned to death.
Tanto como actriz como mujer.
As much as in terms of her being an actress, as much as in her life as a woman.
Y yo creo que sin embargo consigue terminar la película, aunque como mujer sigue siendo an unfinished woman, porque en el momento de mayor felicidad, de mayor realización, de pronto, quiero decir, un accidente mortal termina con su vida.
And I think it's why it's important for her to finish the film, as important for her as an actress as it is for a woman, because, in fact, her life is about to come to an end through this unexpected accident.
Pero el hecho de, por ejemplo, una vez que consigue la oportunidad de poder trabajar en cine, algo que ella, con lo que ella ha soñado, de pronto, su vida, sin embargo, es terrible. Y quiero decir, cada noche antes de llegar al rodaje es una noche dramática para ella, llena de nervios y llena de cosas desagradables. Entonces, desgraciadamente, cada vez que llega al rodaje, lo vemos en alguna secuencia, llega hecha polvo al rodaje, que no es el mejor modo para hacer una comedia.
¿Llegue cómo?
Hecha polvo. Hecha polvo es very bad.
This Madrid slang, they keep changing. But the fact is that even though she's always dreamed of being an actress, when that moment finally comes, in fact, that life is really terrible for her. Her life is terrible when she becomes an actress. Every night when she shows up to the set, she's very, very nervous. She's really unhappy. And unhappily...
This is the worst way to go to comedy.
And she shows up sort of really kind of completely unkempt, unprepared for her work.
So then we see that she has a lot of problem to act. But also in the voiceover of Mateo, she said, always she came very badly in a bad situation to shoot. We have to make many takes, but there is always one take when she was great. And we see at the end. So for that reason, at the end, I put just these 3 minutes of girl and suitcases just to demonstrate that even in that situation, I mean, she got it. I mean, she did a good work. But it was very painful to reach that ultimate take.
Okay, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. I want to thank Penelope Cruz and Pedro Almodovar very much for being here, and thank you all for coming as well.
Thank you very much.
Gracias.